Hello, I'm Henry.
And I'm Maureen.
And on this podcast, we have Maya Djidjik, who is Associate Professor of the Joseph L. Rotman School of Management in Toronto, is on the guru radar of the Thinkers 50, and has written a book this March called Possible Self.
Fantastic. I'm looking so forward to this conversation, Henry.
Absolutely. And what's your joy at work this week?
Well, it's been a really interesting week. I've been having lots of conversations about our Global Majority apprenticeship program. And it's exciting to know that people are really keen to actually support the Global Majority. You know, so it's not just about an EDI exercise tick box, like we've got this policy. It's about making a difference and making sure that we are raising Global Majority people into leadership positions that represents our communities, our organizations, the world.
Absolutely. And what is the Global Majority?
The Global Majority is what we call, well, instead of us referring to ethnic minorities, because the Global Majority are not ethnic minorities.
Yeah.
They may be, you know, the Global Majority are people of color, you know, all over the world. They are the majority.
Absolutely.
That's it. So rather than diminish by calling us, referring to people as ethnic minorities, we decided that we're going to go with Global Majority.
Absolutely. Yes.
So how's your week been, Henry?
We had a fun staff meeting. We're basically going to go for an employee ownership trust, which is like a John Lewis model. And we had one of our shareholders who has sold two companies. In this first company, he sold to a NASDAQ company. That's the American stock market company. Mm-hmm. He had 200 staff and very few of them stayed after 2 years. Whereas with this company, which he sold to an employee ownership trust, most of them have stayed. So he talked at the staff meeting about what is involved in an employee ownership trust. And I've had a lot of investors come to me and say, you know, they want to buy Happy, but they don't really express the culture of the organization. Whereas obviously with the employees of the organization, you know, they will express that culture. They will have that. And so I'm looking to sell my shares to an employee ownership trust in probably a year's time.
Well, it sounds really exciting. And I think you're so right, because us as employees here will continue that.
Absolutely.
We don't want to change it because it works.
Yes, it does work. It absolutely works.
Yes.
Okay, now over to Maya.
Hi, Maya, and welcome to our podcast.
Pleasure to be here.
Great. And so my first question is about happiness and joy, because we're all about happiness and joy here. And you talk about happiness being an emotion in relation to outcome, but joy as an emotion in relation to process. So tell me more about that.
I think for most of us in our everyday language, most of us don't make a distinction. We kind of just call it maybe happy. Right? It's everything is, you know, oh, I feel happy. I feel good.
Yeah.
It feels good.
Yeah.
Feels happy. However, inside of it, you will notice two very distinct emotions and that signal to us very different things. So happiness signals that you have reached a goal, no matter what that goal is. It could be a goal that maybe you didn't, it's not developmental, it doesn't draw you. But let's say you said to yourself, listen, I want to clean my house 4 times a month. And then you reach that goal and you're like, okay, I feel happy. And in the moment you have a little peak, you'll feel a little, oh, okay, good, this happened. But you notice it'll go down very, very quickly. So it's basically an emotion in relation to an outcome, but the goal itself doesn't need to be anything that's developmental for you.
Uh-huh.
Joy, on the other hand, is a signal that you are moving towards your potential. It's signaling to you that you're growing. And just as growing is continual, your joy can be continual. So the best way to see it is when you see children. They'll have joy just trying to get up and get around or reach for something. I think what thrills us so much is when we see children, we see that joy, but we need to understand as adults, we can have the same grow, same joy if we put ourselves in position in which we are growing. That growth is continuous, the joy can be continuous. Happiness is a little peak that goes away and you can chase the next one, but you don't have to. You can reorient towards growth and then you get that continual joy. And one more thing, if you don't mind me mentioning about it, is that, you know, joy can be had together with other emotions that are not so positive. So, for example, you can have it, let's say you have a grandparent pass away and you're going over old letters or photos, And there's this sense of deepening. You can be growing inside of a situation that is difficult.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that will feel like, I know that joy sounds like a strange word to put in that context, but you feel some sort of growth, deepening connection is joy inside of that sadness. So we can have joy accompany us through our good and bad, throughout challenging, throughout really difficult things in our life. There could be this underground of deepening and growing, which gives us that continuous joy.
Ah.
Because our slogan is creating joy at work.
Yes.
But you think that joy doesn't necessarily make us happy.
It can. It makes us joyful, which is better. Because it's more.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
More lasting, right? Like it goes on. It's a little bit like being in love, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're miserable, but on average, you're growing inside of that and you're trying. Or I imagine how people feel like when they're raising children, there's a lot of difficult bits, but underlying, there's this joy of growth, of you growing as a person and watching somebody else grow as a person. So happiness is fun. It's nice. Joy is something that gives us direction in life towards potential, whereas happiness can't do that for us.
Okay, that's so interesting because it's almost like we've learned that we're all trying to be happy, whereas where you're saying that is just a goal rather than actually that sustained growth, which is joy.
Actually, if you ask, I sometimes do this thought experiment with people when they tell me they want to be happy. I said, well, let's do this little thought experiment. Imagine if I promise you can be happy 24/7, would you take that? They're like, I want to be happy. Mm-hmm. And then I tell them, well, I'll put you in a little room, okay? And I have some friends who are psychiatrists and clinical psychologists. They're going to give me a little pill, right? And every day I'm going to come to your little room and I'll give you this little pill. And every day, 24/7, you'll be happy. Do you want that life? And inevitably, every single person says, no. And then I tell them, so I guess you don't want to be happy. You want to live. Because life is full of obstacles. Life is full of losses. You want to live and grow in life rather than just be happy.
So we talk about creating happy workplaces, but you would suggest creating joyful workplaces.
Yes. Or rather facilitating conditions for people to be joyful in their workplaces. Because you can't really create it. You create a set of situations, set of circumstances, set of policies, and then allow people inside the organization to grow, which would produce their joy.
Because what we have at Happy is we ask people what joy they get from their work. And it's currently, on average, 86% of people find joy in 86% of their work.
In 86% of, wow, interesting.
Yeah.
So this is at your company or broadly across other companies?
This is our company.
Yeah.
Okay, and now let's contrast that with what you have in most of other companies. If you look at Gallup, you have something like 70% people being disengaged fully
yes,
from their work.
Yeah.
What you have done in your company then is that you have created conditions where people are growing.
Yes.
And they're feeling that joy, right? Now, you can't force somebody to grow. If somebody decides to stagnate, they're going to stagnate. You can't get to 100% because somebody somewhere is going to decide, I don't want to grow. I'm just going to sit it out and not grow. But the fact that you got such high percentage means that you have created conditions that allows them to follow their interests, follow their potential as they're developing.
Absolutely.
So I suppose like this, again, takes us back to self and how people see themselves. And you've created something called the Wheel of Self and the five elements to enable it. Can you tell us more about that?
For sure. I found that people tend to overly focus on their behavior, particularly if they're thinking of change. Let's say they're feeling stagnating, they want to change something. I need to start exercising, I need to stop eating donuts, I need to, and they have a series of behaviors. And it makes sense. Behaviors are very obvious, they're very visible, they're measurable. So workplaces tend to focus on behaviors. Mm-hmm. So whenever there's change management, they always say, well, we need to see the behaviors. Well, the problem with behavior is just one part of the self. So it's like a one spoke of a wheel, and the other spokes of the wheel are your emotions, your motivation, your thoughts or your mind, and your old history that you carry in your nervous system. So if you're either a person or a workplace who just wants to change a behavior, it's like moving one spoke of the wheel one way while the rest of the wheel is moving the other way. It basically, the only place it can lead to is fragmentation, self-fragmentation. It basically makes us break ourselves because we can only do it while we have a lot of willpower. And as soon as we run out of the willpower, which is inevitable given it's a limited resource, we go back to the old way of being. So what we want to strive for is transformation, where the all five parts of the self are moving in the same direction, which is what natural growth is supposed to be like, and not breaking ourselves or even breaking our employees by, let's say, asking them to do something that's entirely opposite to their emotions and thoughts and motivations. We break people in our organizations.
So if an organization worked on the wheel of self, they would want to do behavior, emotion, motivation, thoughts, and they would do all of that.
Yes. So basically, you can think of that wheel of self as extending into organizational space in the following way. On the motivation side, notice how inside of us, we have conflicting motivations. So when you get even inside of yourself, you have to choose, oh, I want to spend a lot of time with my friends and I want to spend time with my parents or my children or whatever. I want to do a lot of work, but then the family. So notice even inside of one single person, there's a conflict, motivational conflict. Well, once you have organizational goals, what is the chance that there's going to be no conflict? So is the organization able to bring up and discuss in what ways are the ways that they want to move either aligned or conflicting with individual goals? So it needs to be an honest discussion and an attempt at an alignment rather than, you know, the classic one is, here's your new goal. You can't give me a goal. There's no such, you can't give me a want. You can't make me want something. It's not something that somebody else can do. So if you want to bring about something in the workplace, we need to align.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. The second thing has to do with, in the behavior section, it has to do a lot with the willpower, right? Do you know what collectively drains the people in your organization and what collectively might restore them? There's things that collectively drain people, like the way you have organizations organize meetings, for example, back to back for an hour. But it doesn't have to be like that. So talk to each other about what collectively drains us and let's have less of that. And then let's talk about collectively what is restorative. Now, it turns out that because we're unique, we have unique restores. Okay, it's not going to be collective. It's going to be unique. Well, then let's provide flexibility takes in the workplace that each person can uniquely restore themselves. So that's on the behavior side. On the emotion side, the extension into organization is organizational culture. What happens? People think, organizational culture is like, hey, you know, do we have ping pong tables and coffee, station?
No.
In my mind, organizational culture is answer to the question, what happens when there's a problem? And if there isn't a process that allows that problem to be solved in a way that the employees feel heard, seen, and treated fairly, no matter what the outcome, the culture of the place is going to be bad. And it comes all the way from the top. So there is no such thing as, oh, there's this little department with a toxic culture. Look straight to the top. That's where the problem is. This person is, or people are tolerating whatever is happening in the bottom. On the side of mind, so we have our individual constructs and lenses through which we see the world, but so do organizations. So you have issues such as there'll be a collective construct of what is a good employee that people say, oh, we want employees to have a good life balance. In the meantime, you promote somebody who has terrible work-life balance. They are always at work. They answer your email at 2 a.m. Yeah. And they have terrible boundaries. So what is happening here? It's like a collective mind that is fragmented. And finally, just as individuals carry individual history and individual trauma, so the organization can carry collective. You can sometimes see that you have organizations where there's a lot of people who are on a sick leave or who have left or who have a lot of illnesses. There's, depending on the organization, history of suicides. We need to look at all of these factors to kind of promote health of the organizations. I hope that wasn't too long of an answer.
No, but it's very powerful because there's a lot in there.
There is a lot in there.
That's
yeah.
it. And I think something that was really coming up for me is about trust being at the heart of it all.
Yeah.
That's something that we always lead by here at Happy, and, you know, being able to trust that will allow for all of those five different parts to come together.
Yeah. And when you think really how trust can be built in the moment by people being really authentic Because most people think trust is from a relationship. Well, how quickly can somebody break trust? It takes a second.
Yes. Yeah.
It takes a second. But we can also build a trust in a second if we're authentic and open and mature and grown. And so I think that trust can be built and rebuilt. We just have to be inwardly committed to it. And then it gets transmitted, if you will, even non-verbally.
Now, you talked there about wants, and you talk about that quite a lot in the book. Is everyone's core wants, is it different for different people, or is it?
What most people think when you see children being very different in their interests, people say, they have different personality. It's actually not different personality, it's different potential. So one kid loves to play with the trucks, and another kid loves to play with the airplanes, and another kid loves to draw. They're having different potential, and the potential manifests as interest. Think about what interest is if you turn the tuner of interest very, very high. It's love. It's passion. Whether it's a person or it's a profession. So what we have is this interest guiding us throughout our lives. And so it looks to us, it's a person. No, it's this thing that is pulling us forward. And the way the link to that is our wants. Like, I want to play with this. I want to get this book rather than that book. And the problem is that we have educational systems that are dedicated to us not following the wants, but picking from a nice little menu of wants that they provide.
Right.
For the kind of person that you are, here's a set of little menu that you're supposed to pick from. This is the one that are, for you, respectable wants. And therefore, they lock in the potential of that person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually really loving this discussion, that Maya, because you've talked about being joyful, talking about the wants. And then there's the thing about success without fulfillment, which just throws it up again. So can you tell me more about that?
Success without fulfillment is basically when you pick from the menu of wants that somebody else gave you and you become very good at it. You can get good at this. So you have some happiness, you have momentary peak of happiness, but then you don't feel fulfilled. So what's missing is that you're actually, your potential is just sitting there in the corner waiting for you. But you want it to be a very successful lawyer, but actually the potential is about something completely different. And he's just sitting in a corner saying, is it my turn yet? It sends you little messages in the middle of the night that say, should you be trying to do something different? And then you wake up and your life rolls in on you and you're like, no, I have to take care of the family. And then there's the house and there's this. But it doesn't give up on you. So again, when in a quiet moment, again, it will send a little message from the corner. But what about you could try this? And again, you will shut it down. What I love about potential is that it doesn't give up on you.
Yeah.
It will try to signal to you from the corner all the way to the end. And so either we can turn and listen or we can ignore and stay successful or stay acceptable or live out our lives that are really meant for us.
That's a great reminder. That is such a great reminder. You know, success doesn't mean fulfillment. No, I love that.
Yeah, because you talk in the book about people have been hugely successful, having big cars, big planes, all these kinds of things, but they're not fulfilled.
No, and I think it becomes very confusing because what we're taught when we're young is that if you pick what we tell you, you're going to get everything you want. And because we believe that we shouldn't be fulfilled now, but in the future, we think, okay, well, if I get there, then it's coming. And there's this kind of feeling, and then it's coming, and then it's coming, and it never comes.
Whereas we can be fulfilled right now.
Yes.
So basically, I tell them, if you don't feel fulfilled right now, you're never going to become fulfilled. Your goals, the thing you set up, you need to find that thread that it connects you to yourself of that interest and development. And when you start being pulled by that thread, it's trying to kind of, right? And if you're holding on to it, you're going to start feeling fulfilled. You won't need a goal for you will actually be fulfilled in the moment.
That's amazing.
It is. I suppose it's how do people acknowledge, because you said about everyone has that potential inside of them. That's the thing that's never going to go. But how are they going to actually identify that invisible threads rather than fixating on the wants of others?
You know what brings people to that thread? Misery.
I felt that. I felt that as you said it.
It's the pain. It's that pain of lack of fulfillment. It's that feeling of the suffering of waking up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night saying, what am I doing? It doesn't feel right. And that's okay. You know, I keep trying to think about how can we remind people to stay aligned with their interests and potential all along the way, even when they're not, when they don't go into a slump before they stagnate. I think it's possible, but most of us, you know, even myself, right, it has to get heavy going before we're like, okay, wait. So the key, if we know that that's the process, the key is how do we recognize the signals faster and faster so that we don't need to get very far off the track, that as soon as it doesn't feel like that smooth down the rail and it suddenly feels like you've fallen out, you stop and say, hold on, what is happening? What have I done? How can I get back on my track?
Yeah.
And are you fulfilling your potential? And have you always done it?
Oh my God, no, nobody writes a book about this who has done it always. They would just go on their merry way. I am exactly the opposite. I'm the person who has been unfulfilled across various parts, right? But have always been interested. There's the strong experience. Okay, here's what joy feels like. And then here's what this other way is. And so how do I get back? So the getting back to it is what I have learned to master over time. Even in my professional life, it happened many times. For example, I remember exactly the point at which I started my career as a researcher. So I was like a lab rat. I would be running studies, doing the stats, writing up papers that nobody reads, you know, in academic journals nobody has heard of. But I remember, and I was very excited. It felt very much, this is it. Like it felt, and I remember when I was still publishing, everybody saying, oh yeah, you need more. And that there was a moment where it just stopped. Like there was no more joy. Like I grew in it as much as I could, but then I couldn't get out because now you're in this life and everybody's, oh, here's another paper and here's another data set and here's another study. And you're kind of trying to pull out, but the life seems to be conspired to keep you in. And so that's that feeling of stuck. You feel like, okay, yes, it's successful. People really know about this and, you know, these studies, they love it, but I need to move on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's that process of getting out of the thing that works for others into the thing that really grows you.
Mm.
That's a process because I believe that many people can say that they are feeling stuck or they're feeling stagnant, but it's that not getting to the point before they break, as you said earlier on. So yes. Yes, it is.
That's why I've been writing this book for it. It took me from the moment that I, about 7 years to until the moment of publishing.
Wow.
So I put a lot of thought into making something that is practical. And even the way that I phrased it before, I said, life conspires to stop us, to keep us stuck, but it's not. It's part of me that conspired.
Right.
And so in order to break, I needed to find that part of me that was keeping me conspired to be stuck and heal it and grow it. And once it was grown, you make a break. And actually, it's better. People, you know, it works. You find a way that it works.
Yes. And it just brings it back around. It's like a cycle. Brings it back around. You've got that potential. It never goes. It never leaves you. So there's always an opportunity to keep growing, to keep going.
Yeah.
Yes.
Love that. So I'm going to ask you something just outside where about you talked about joy. I would like to know what gives you the most joy. What's your love outside of work? But what's your love?
Oh, God. Can I tell you multiple things?
Yes.
Good. Yes.
So obviously, I love my partner, family. It gives me joy to be with them. I love writing. I love the sea. I know it sounds funny. I love sports. I love tennis. Mm-hmm. I love soccer. I love. And so it's in different. It's not one domain. It's like multiple domains. I love my friends. I love doing nothing sometimes.
Yes.
Stretching out and reading a book. That it's, I love, you know, not being productive or on. There's all these things that are across the domains. We need to figure out what is the thing that gets us very, very excited. I love reading books by people who are dead.
Okay. Tell me more about that. Why
that they're dead or why?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you why. There's just so much content out these days, right? And sometimes you know that if a novel, you know, or philosopher from 1400 BC has made it to be on our shelf, there's something to it.
Okay.
Or if a novelist from 400 years ago, we still open up, we know that there is something to it. And so I love reaching for something and knowing that somebody is speaking to me across centuries in language of a human being. So that there's something about how they have put thought about life that is valuable because it reached me across so many centuries. To me, it's very exciting.
Mm.
Yeah, no, that is.
So, Maya, tell us your three tips for happy workplaces.
One, don't force people into their strengths at work. Allow them to work on things that interest them, even though they're not that good.
Oh, okay.
I promise you their enthusiasm and learning and joy are going to pay back. Because the things we're very good at often can no longer grow us. Second, find those things that drain everybody. And stop.
And stop them, and yes.
How long of a meeting is it? It's like shape them, change them, adjust them. Because if everybody's complaining about it, okay, there's something you can do, you should be able to do about it. And three, for people to fill their cup, they need different things. So be able to have a discussion about it. So, for example, I can know that it fills your cup to chat with colleagues over lunch, and it fills Maureen's cup to have time off and to disconnect. So I'll know when, if I'm chatty, I'll come to you and I'll leave Maureen alone to restore. So around restores allow flexibility so people can fill their cup in their unique way.
Mm, I think you already know me, you know, restoring, giving me that space. Wow.
Okay, so viewers, read Maya's book, The Possible Self. It's been out in March. It's been released in March. Yeah.
March.
How's it going?
Very well. I said that in a very surprised way, but I am. I know that there's 3 million nonfiction books published every year. So I am surprised that people are, you know, 2 months in, people are buying it and recommending it to their family and their friends. I think it surprised me a little bit. That's all. In a good way. And I'm glad. I was told people don't read anymore. They don't get beyond the second page. Like, why are you writing a book? Just, you know, do something else, right? But I am glad to hear that not only do they buy the book, they read it, they benefit from it, and they want the same joy for their family and friends, and so they recommend. So it's been going well. I'm happy about it, and I'm a bit joyful as well, right?
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Maya. Nice. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Very nice being a guest in your program. Take good care.
Take care.
So Maureen, what did you get from that?
Again, another great conversation.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start, Henry. It was so good. Right. So the first thing that really stood out was when she said, potential doesn't give up on you. I was just floored with that.
Yeah.
That's such a lovely thing to hold on to and give people hope not to give up, because potential won't give up on you. So that was the one. But the one thing that challenged me, different way of thinking, was about the strengths. First tip about strengths, yeah.
That was intriguing, wasn't
That's it?
Yes.
Not to work to, it's not about working to the strengths, but allow people to work on the things that interest them. And it made sense because it's about the joy.
But isn't there the case that that strengths are what interests people?
I don't know. I really, really don't know. Because you've got people that are really great at doing things, but that's not the core thing that gives them joy. I'm a great athlete, but it doesn't mean that I have to be, that's where I want to go. I want to do coaching athletes instead.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I think I just want to sit with that a little bit longer because that's really intrigued me, should I say.
Yes, indeed.
How about you?
The whole thing in the book about how people are hugely successful but are not fulfilled, that is intriguing. And the thing about being joyful rather than happy.
Yeah. Do you know what made me laugh is when you talked about that successful not being fulfilled, it reminded me of that program, Reginald Perrin. I don't know if you remember that.
I do, yes.
Walked away from everything, you know, so.
Yes.
I digress.
People internationally might not know Reginald Perrin, though, but. Or even younger people in the night.
Well, somebody that had it all and decided to just walk away from it all as well. So
absolutely. Okay, folks. So I think we should talk about our courses so that people know what we actually do. Although most of our programs are leadership and development, we were originally an IT training company. And we still do have a full range of MS Office courses, especially Excel.
I know, because I joined as an Excel trainer.
Oh, you did?
I did, yes. But it's but what amazed me is that lots of people use Excel, you know, so why would they want to go on an Excel training course? But the people that have attended our training courses have found out that, you know what, there's so much more.
Yes.
And it has saved them time and made them more productive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They find they save hours of their time. Yes. Yeah. So check out our Excel courses on our website, happy.co.uk.
And please do subscribe and let others know about the Happy Manifesto podcast.